round 9 of the MotoGP World Championship. The halfway stage of this incredible season approaches. Marc Marquez in pole, chasing his 7th successive win here in Germany.
Hello and welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 502 for Wednesday, the 20th of July, 2016. I'm Dave Neal in a hot and humid North Nottinghamshire on the banks of the River Trent. And joining me this week is Martin Darlington over in the desert. Martin, great to be back on with you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, we've got a hot and humid place over here. Yeah, the humidity's kicked in these last couple of days, which is makes it pretty grim. And we haven't got any rivers, so I'm not.
We have the tidal River Trent just at the end of the field, so yeah.
But I have it's a nice river of Guinness.
Oh yeah, because it's that sort of time, isn't it? It's only 20 to 5 in the UK, so maybe
sun's gone down here.
Ah, well, they are. You see, so you're
that's
allowed.
A weird thing, because we're so much closer to the equator, even though, you know, year round you can sit outside in your garden. You know, 3-4 days of the year it'll rain. In fact, this year it was we had quite a lot of rain. There were maybe 6 days in the last year that it rained.
Really? You need to be careful with that.
I know.
Trench foot and all sorts.
But of course, it's interesting to see the approach to rain, because here it's a huge cause for celebration. It's seen as a blessing and a really good thing, because obviously it doesn't happen very often.
No, of course. Whereas here it's just a pain in the ass. But
the weird thing here is it's dark, and because we're 2 hours ahead of you, 3 hours in the winter, you know, but 2 hours ahead of you, so at 8 o'clock, it's been dark for a couple of hours.
And it's unusual in the summertime, isn't it? To think it's dark at that time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a diurnal variation through the year, probably is about 45 minutes.
Wow.
Maybe an hour on sunrise and sunset. So I don't know. We'll Skype someone at 10 o'clock our time, 8 o'clock at home, and you're like, what are they doing? They're outside. It's bright sunlight. Yeah. Because it's an hour and a half till sunset, you know. So,
do you get decent sunsets and things like that, or is it just a pretty swift end to the day? Because we get the beautiful sunsets at the minute.
It's funny. I remember saying to someone after I started flying instruction, when you're meant to know all these weird things instinctively,
of course,
and obviously we don't unless someone tells you. And I said to a mate, I went, do you know, whenever I've been in the tropics, the sunset seems to happen much quicker.
Yeah,
and he went, it does. Of course, it does. I was like, what? He said, you think about it, the sun's dropping below a horizontal line, whereas the further north or south you go, it goes down across a diagonal line.
Of course it does.
So it takes longer. So absolutely near the equator, and we're not that close to the equator here. But
you're closer than we are.
Yeah, by probably 3/4 of the way.
Yeah.
Maybe halfway. But obviously you go down to the equator, and it is like flicking off a lot. I remember being in Belize and it was like daylight. Oh, dusk. No, missed it. It's gone. It's dark.
Blinking, you missed it.
Quick run. Here come the Mozzies.
The same thing I'd noticed. I mean, the furthest south I think I've been in recent memory is on in Mallorca, which isn't that far away. It's only like 1,000 miles south. But even then, you do get an idea that it's like, hang on a minute, it's dark already. What happened?
Mm.
Whereas now we have such prolonged evenings. It's great. The Motopod meteorological angle, I like it.
Yeah, I remember as I was a very small child in Kenya, I don't remember this, but my sister, who was 5 or 6, I suppose, I was about 3, we all stood with 1 foot on each side of the equator.
Impressive.
Yeah, and she got really worried that if we did that, one leg would go one way and one would go the other. Folks had to explain, the globe at home is in 2 halves and you can turn them, so you could try and match.
Did you do the matchstick in a bucket thing?
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. They
spin the different way, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. You know the thing about in a sink or a toilet bowl? That's bollocks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that doesn't happen. Happens with weather systems, but there's so little weight in a sink bowl. Or, you know, the thing about in the Northern Hemisphere, it goes...
Yeah, we'll get one way goes clockwise, one way goes anti-clockwise.
It's crap. It may go that way, but another one will go a different way. There are far more, you know, imperfections in the surface of the bowl or a slight tilt in the bowl are far more influential than that tiny weight of water. If you're talking about weather systems, then yes, it is true that in the Northern Hemisphere, a cyclone goes... clockwise, and an anti-cyclone goes clockwise, and a cyclone goes anti-clockwise, and in the Southern Hemisphere, it's the other way around.
I love this. It's just an education every time I come on with you. It's an education with Harry as well, but for different reasons.
Yeah. Well, he actually talks about bike racing.
Yeah, which is what I guess what we're here for, I suppose.
So, before we go any further, we should give a big shout out to a new subscriber, Joe Muller. I assume that's Muller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R.
I would say Muller. So. Yeah, yeah.
Muller. Joe, thank you very much indeed. And also continued support, recurring subscribers, B. Fetterplace and Brian Elliott. B. and Brian, thank you enormously. It really is very, very welcome. I'm just seeing we've got BSB Super Bowl lap songs, which is blank at the moment because no one sent one.
We had so many. I don't think we managed for the guys and girls that sent them in. Thank you so much for that. I think we covered the bulk of them, but we were pretty much inundated. I think that's the most popular subject we've ever had.
As Harry pointed out, having finally had a dry qualifying session in BSB and hearing the riders. The riders' songs. Our listeners had a shit sight better songs than
they really did. But also, do you know, I was talking to somebody who was at Snetterton. I didn't make it down there due to work, which is struggling really this year to get to a lot of the race meetings. And apparently, they only play sort of 20 seconds of the song as they go out on the sighting lap. Mm. So they don't even play the whole thing as they're going round, which is what I thought was the purpose of it.
They've got a bit better at it, but when I first started walking bike racing in the 80s, I suppose late 70s actually, but you get the winner's national anthem and you would literally get 10 seconds and it'd be like, the record would scratch off and be like, right, that's enough of that.
That's it, boys. Off you go. Thanks very much. Here's your little brown envelope. Off you go. Thanks for turning up.
Yeah, I remember someone saying, oh dear, we're going to need an LP for playing. It might have been a young Alex Barros. I know, it's Brazilian anyway, because apparently the Brazilian national anthem goes on for like 6.5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Play it all the way through. I said, we're going to need
like
a long
12-inch remix.
No, you won't. They only play 10 seconds and scratch it off.
Especially they play the Japanese national anthem as well, don't they? That one gets cut short usually.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. News. We are going back. For the first time since 1982, we're going back to Scandinavia. We're going to Finland from 2018 to the Kimi Ring. Now, I assume that's named for Kimi Räikkönen, but it may not be because it's spelt differently.
It is. But I wonder, that's an unusual name for it. Obviously, we've got the Red Bull Ring coming up in a few weeks' time for MotoGP. But the Kimi Ring, okay? There's all sorts of different permutations and things for that.
There was much hilarity from the more mature members of the press corps, and I'm thinking David Emmert, Dennis Noyes, Matt Loxley and the like, talking about railway crossings. And then David on his Twitter feed posted it. I have said, check David Emmert's Twitter feed to find out why.
Was that for Imatra?
At Moto Matters. It was the, I don't know what the track was, I can't remember, but it was bikes going across the railway track.
There's an iconic picture of Barry Sheen doing exactly that. And I think, subject to confirmation, I think that was Imatra.
Right. But anyway, that's why. So, because David's Twitter feed is so full of information on a race weekend, you'd have to look back a long, long way.
Long way to find.
Now, everyone, a lot of the stuff I've been reading was saying, wow, we could have 20 races in 2018 because Thailand is coming on board. But Harry, who is by far the best informed of all the co-hosts.
He really is.
Said, who keeps saying Thailand's coming next year? I haven't heard anything. So we're not really sure.
No, I don't.
I talk about Indonesia, which may have gone away. There was talk about India, which may have gone away. And obviously Formula One tried that. And there were all sorts of problems getting the kit in there. Something to do with customs.
If they can get to Ricardo Tormo, they can get to Indonesia.
Yeah, that's true.
Not Ricardo Tormo. But it's Rio Hondo. Argentina.
Rio Hondo in Argentina, that's back end of beyond. But I don't think the Argentinian customs are quite as bureaucratically diligent as the Indian customs.
No. We need to make a little bit more investigation into that Thailand one. I'm not sure I've heard anything on that one. Certainly the Finland one.
The thing that worries me is if Circuit of Wales does go down the pan and Silverstone say, look, you know, either give us a proper contract or bugger off.
Yeah.
Because this, can we go there? Yeah, you can. Yeah. Right, next year we won't be there. All right. Bastards. Oh, no, can we come back?
That's it, isn't it? It's going around in circles. But
GP race.
That Circuit of Wales thing just looks less and less likely with each passing week, doesn't it?
And the cynics will say, I told you so, but hey, there you go. What was good news, Germany has signed a further 5-year contract with Dorna. Now, they didn't specify the circuit.
No, they didn't.
But the German representative did say that they're close to sealing a deal with to keep it at the Sachsenring. Judging by the crowds, they'd be idiots to move it. That place gets packed out, and it's weird. I don't like the track, and I don't understand why I don't like the track, because it always throws up really good races.
It does.
I
mean, it really does, because it's not a horsepower track, is it? It's rider. It's more rider technique. I'd rather they go there than somewhere. I don't know what they would use the shortened Hockenheim. That's just sticking two fingers up to history, isn't it? With the old sweeping track through the woods.
I mean, the Nürburgring race circuit, not a fan.
No, Nürburgring.
It's a weird track.
Oh, Jesus. Can you imagine turn one on MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3? Imagine turn one on that massive hairpin. No, that's just going to be chaos.
When Superbikes went there,
they did, yeah.
The bit that was really cool was like the last fast corner, that big sweeping turn. I think it was the last corner.
Yeah, anything up to that, as they go up the hill through the chicane, they're quite fast changes. But that first part of the track is so nagging.
All the superbike riders seem to take a different line to that first hairpin, and Biaggi's generally involved going as wide as he could to stay out the aggro, and then he try and make it back on the rest of the lap. I don't know. I mean, the Lausitzring, where we'll see where it's going. I don't know much about the track. I can't.
Lausitzring, wasn't that? That's like a bit like Rockingham in the UK, isn't it? And Indy.
Yeah.
It's got an oval round the outside, and then they go on the infield.
Yeah.
Is that Oschersleben? I can't remember.
I can't really see. I mean, Hockenheim, the original circuit, would never get cleared. In fact, that's why it's not used anymore. It'd be too bloody dangerous.
You can still see the outline of it on Google Earth, which is quite interesting.
Right.
To look at the old track.
But it looks like the Saxony Council just need to dot some I's and cross some T's.
I think they do. I don't see it going really anywhere else. And like as you say, I think Saxony, when you've got the likes of Barcelona, Sepang, of Kota, the big flowing wide tracks, it's nice to have a nadgery little track, a little bit like Jerez, just where horsepower and outright top speed doesn't really count for too much. It's all bike setup, it's rider input, and that's all.
Yeah, and since we've lost Laguna Seca, that's one of the few remaining MotoGP tracks like that, you know.
Yeah, it's nice to have a track that's sort of, you know, into the sub-130s and things like that. A nice short track. All right, there's one or two on social media going, when it was wet for Moto3, we're like, is this race still going on? Because they do an awful lot of laps in that respect. It does seem like a longer race, but I think it throws up much more interest in racing sometimes.
And, of course, you often get the German guy with the hats. I don't know if you know the guy. I mean,
indeed, every year Ian Wheeler posts a picture of him.
He's had hats with bikes going round and round, little model bikes going around the rim, which I thought was just brilliant. He's obviously a very eccentric gentleman.
Indeed.
No surprises. We talked about this last week. We were waiting for the confirmation. Johann Zarco announced that he will indeed be joining Tech 2 next season in MotoGP to ride alongside Jonas Folger, which is ironic, because this weekend he did quite a lot of riding alongside Jonas Folger. Whoops, spoiler.
Yeah, indeed. We'll come to that later on.
We'll come back to that one. and props to Jorge Navarro. Harry and I both were saying last week, look, he's had a really nasty injury. He's an idiot. He shouldn't be coming back yet. You know, the title's probably gone away. He actually, God, he was so brave, and he didn't crash, and he didn't hurt himself again. He almost managed to pull 3 points back on Brad Binder. But he was a little group of three. He ended up losing it, and he only closed the gap by a single point. But it was still very impressive, and it will give him a lot of confidence moving on.
Of course it will. Of course it will. And that's the thing, isn't it? There's nothing better than a rider riding on confidence, especially one coming back from injury.
And, of course, later on we'll be talking about what happens when a rider loses all their confidence. And I did want to also say, and I know I've been banging on about this a bit this season, a lot of people, but me in particular, have to put my hands up and say I have for a few seasons said, Hector Barbera, what's the point?
No, I agree completely.
He was a famous tow merchant. He'd get a tow round for his fast lap, qualify in the first six first two or three rows, and then fall back through the pack, and you think, why is he there? And also, I mean, the Keith Ewan and Julian Ryder were saying, you know, well, he's no wet weather rider, and certainly it's not something he's been known for in the past. Flipping heck, he did well this weekend.
He really did.
But I also just wanted to put it in perspective what he's doing this season on a two-year-old Ducati.
Oh, yeah.
2 years ago, he had 2 points at this stage. The last 3 years, Saxon Ring has been the ninth race, so it's the end of the first half of the season. So 2 years ago, he had 2 points at this stage. Last year, he had 18. This year, he's got 65 points. He's seventh in the championship standings. Only one independent team rider is ahead of him. That's what we're now meant to call satellite teams. That's Paul Espargaro, who's only 7 points ahead of him on 72. And he's the leading Ducati rider.
That's the crux of the issue.
He is the leading Ducati rider. Hector Barbera, from what is seen as the lowest level of the... Is it?
Yep.
No, sorry. Vinci Blusens, Aspar, I think, are the lowest level. I don't think Ducati actually differentiate, but we know that Octo Pramac are the senior...
Yeah, they are,
...independent team. Then it's Vinci Blusens, then it's Aspar. So... he's a Vinci Blusens, so he's from the lower end of the satellite family at Ducati, and he's the leading Ducati rider. Flipping heck.
Props to him.
Chapeau,
super.
Monsieur.
Indeed. And you say, you throw enough mud and it will stick, and he hasn't helped himself in a lot of years with the towing. He's very blatant about it. But this weekend, I absolutely agree. You know, what a ride from him. Fair play. You know, you still got to get on and ride it. And even if you do qualify on the front row after a tow, you've still got to try and back that up, which in the past he hasn't done to the lesser degree. But this weekend, as we come on to in the into the race later on, outstanding.
No, absolutely. And, of course, he went... hang on. Did he go through to... No, he didn't go through to... I'm confusing myself here.
You're confusing yourself now because he was on the front row. But did he go from Q... Did he go through from Q1?
No, he didn't do Q1. No, he went straight through to Q2.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I was at work all day, so I didn't see an awful lot of qualifying, unfortunately.
No, don't worry about that. Right. Do you want to take the next?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sure. Yeah, no problem.
You are a friend of his.
Indeed.
Well, you've interviewed him recently.
Ah, he's a good guy. We know each other reasonably well. Danny Kent broke his ribs karting during the weekend and then made it worse by high siding. He's not listed on the official falls report for the German GP, but what we believe happened was that Kent heard a pop when putting on his leathers, courtesy of Matt Burt and Steve Day in commentary. But it was more, I think, of a Leopard trying to save face on that one, which happened during the free practice session and then took no further part. So pop ribs for Danny Kent. He took no further part. Yeah, not nice. I know his sister works down at M4 Karting. Fraser Rogers and one or two others are quite regular down there. So maybe make it a little bit too much fun down the bottom end. But was it on the pre-race? I thought it was during the week. It said during the weekend. No, it would have been during the week. Cause it says during the weekend.
Sorry, before the weekend,
Before the weekend, yeah. It was earlier in the week that it happened. Maybe that was Leopard Racing just trying to... press officers putting the spin on things. Who'd have thought it? But hopefully he will be back for Austria in 3 weeks' time. The riders are already, and teams, are already at the Red Bull Ring for a test, which was... as far as the MotoPod time machine goes, yesterday and today, we'll bring you the times for that and any insight next week. Whether the results will be forthcoming remains to be seen, but there will be one or two bits leaked out, I'm sure. No Repsol Honda there. Ducati have rented the track, so it really is a private test. And as Marc Marquez and Danny Pedrosa have already done two promotional events aboard the RCVS, they weren't invited. I know that Yamaha, Ducati, and I think Suzuki had a charter jet from Saxon Ring to Austria. So those guys were there fairly quickly. And that KTM will have their first run alongside MotoGP bikes. And as I've just seen on social media, Casey Stoner will be there on a Ducati.
Yeah, and strong expectations that Casey will wildcard there.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Julian Ryder's been plugging this one for a couple of months now. So, no, he won't do Phillip Island because they will not want him to be the fastest Ducati rider when he hasn't ridden a GP bike in anger for like 3 years. So, but they're saying he will be there testing this week at the Red Bull Ring. And this, yeah, they're just saying Michele Pirro has got a wildcard entry. All they got to do is take his numbers off, put a 27 on.
That's right.
And so we could well see a Ducati victory with Casey Stoner.
That might give Jorge Lorenzo a little bit of comfort for next season, because I think at the minute his head's fallen off, and with the banning of wings and things, I think there's an awful lot of work to be done before next season.
Yeah, for sure. Having said that, and it was only after it was signed that I looked back and realised that he worked with Gigi Deligne in the Aprilia days, or when he was in the 125 and T50s. So yes, they know each other.
Oh, very much so.
And apparently they know each other very well. And someone said they're similar characters, like focused and not very entertaining, possibly. Okay. I don't know. I was advised at the Qatar test when I was saying to one of the professional journalists, you know, how much I'd like to have a chat with Gigi Deligne. He said, well, good luck with that one. And if you do, he will talk for quite a while, but you'll realise afterwards he's actually told you absolutely nothing.
Said nothing whatsoever.
He is a very, very canny operator, and he doesn't give anything away. And he said, if you want someone to give things away, he said, go and talk to Davide Brivio and or Lucio Ciccanello. And of course, I said, well, I already have, and they were wonderfully indiscreet. Not indiscreet. But they are very open, and they're a joy to industry. But yeah, be interesting.
Well, I remember, just as an aside, Barcelona, when I spoke to Cal in LCR, Lucio Cecchinello remembers you, the helicopter pilot.
Yeah.
He was very complimentary. We haven't had a chance to speak since then.
Well, I actually was very tempted in one of those... Sorry.
No,
was,
carry on.
That noise. I was very tempted to send him a congratulatory text on Cal's second place, because he gave me his mobile number and he was very open about it. It just said, please don't spread it around. So I've only given it to all my friends, all my friends' friends and my friends' friends, tennis partners.
Well done, Blackadder.
Yeah. So nobody knows but us three and
the rest of the English-speaking world.
Exactly. And I thought, no, that would be really naff. But no, he's lovely. He probably remembers me because he's doing, Licio's doing his private pilot's license, fixed wing.
Yes.
But he said it's very, very difficult. He's done 17 hours in like 3 years because he can only spare a bit of time here and a bit of time there. So the first half of each lesson is spent refreshing.
There's a refresher course on each time he sat down in the pilot's.
And we just went through the lift equation. He just said, I always get confused on the lift equation. It's just lift is equal to CL half ray V squared S. There you go. One day when we
scoot past.
In the off season, we'll do a helicopter. To be honest, actually, there's probably about 10 of our listeners who'd be interested.
Yeah, no, there would be, but at least there are listeners who are interested in that.
90 wouldn't give a shit, but 10 of them would be like, yeah, we'll do it. You know,
the multi-pod education, I love it. Where are we? Go ahead.
Speaking of education, no, there's not really an effective segue I can do into this. Speed Week and GP1. Speed Week, don't we love them? Apparently, according to Speed Week, Bastianini is going to replace Brad Binder in the Red Bull KTM IO squad for next year. And he's going to earn €240,000 a year, which is not bad for a 19-year-old.
Wow.
I mean, obviously, although I don't think we've had confirmation of where Brad Binder is going to be next year, everyone's assuming he'll be moving up to Moto2. Probably going into the IOS team and replacing
Zarco.
If you're on a career trajectory like Zarco and Binder, since they've hooked up with Aki IO, you don't want to leave if you've got a chance not to.
Absolutely not.
So Bastianini used to race the KTM before Gresini went to Honda, so that's quite a good. Good shout, I think.
Yeah, he'd be aware of the bike and what it can do. And I think it'd be an interesting one, that, because he's almost flattered to deceive, hasn't he? I think this is the leg up that he needs to take that step forward and start becoming a consistent podium man and race winner.
Yeah, absolutely. The other rumour about silly season was that Stefan Bradl turned down an offer from Avintia Ducati. Eventually, Blueson's racing, likely to be replacing Loris Baz after Hector Barbera's great performance this weekend and, of course, his season so far. I think it would be a great shame to see Loris Baz leave. I'd like to see him stay in MotoGP. I don't think he's really been given much of a shout or much of a chance so far because of the, you know, last year he was struggling around on that open class bike. This yes. year he's got decent Ducati and he's been injured, you know, and it's absolutely no fault of his own. He got Bautista'd. Many of the riders have been Bautista'd at some stage.
That's almost like a badge of honour, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the rumour is that Bautista might be joining the Ducati family. If you're like, oh, okay.
okay. <You know.
laughs> Well, it's like someone said, Franco Morbidelli rammed into Tito about a couple of years ago, and Mark VDS went, God, that was impressive.
We like him. Come and join the family.
Yeah.
You'll do for us.
Yeah. So, the rumour being that Stefan Bradl's turned that offer down. Maybe he just doesn't want to see himself seeming to be dropping down the order, and he's been linked to Honda and Ducati World Superbike. And as Harry points out in the notes that Harry wrote most of these because he knows the stuff.
He does.
The second Ducati seat has been linked from everyone to Marco, from Marco Melandri to Mickey van der Mark. I mean, Marco Melandri, I don't think. That's it. Mickey van der Mark, definitely you try and get him.
See Hayden and Bradl on the Hondas wouldn't be a bad thing. And I think Stefan Bradl, you come to a point and where you are with Bradley Smith and the such like, where you look at MotoGP and you go, right, how long can I do this? Because I'm not going to gain a factory ride. And nobody yeah. rides around for the fun of it. They're all winners, you know, ex-world champion in Stefan Bradl's case. You come yeah. to a point where you think, okay, I'm this year old. I've got a lot left to give. I could go to World Superbikes, earn a little bit more money because it is all about the money as well as the racing. You know, everybody wants to make a living from this and they can be short careers, as we know. So it wouldn't yeah. really be a bad thing to get into the Honda family and maybe take on the Suzuka side as well. But if we're looking at changes around like that, who's moving on from Ducati? That's not been announced yet, has it? Because you've got Chaz.
Giuliano.
Giuliano is
no,
going.
Chaz has signed again.
Chaz has signed again, hasn't he? I thought that. Chaz so much, it must be
yeah, they're Giuliano. Not really it looks like Giuliano will go to the bike that Forres is on.
Ah, okay.
Which is almost factory. It's a very well-supported privateer team.
Yes.
Satellite team, independent team, whatever they're calling it in World Superbikes this week. It's a privateer team, but and it looks like the rumor was that Forres might go to a rebooted Aprilia team, but apparently they were also linked with Stefan Bradl.
He's been linked.
He's a very, very bright lad. When I spoke to one of the first interviews I did was Bradl and Lucio when he was at LCR.
Yeah,
Lucio couldn't do anything but sing his praises. Stefan Bradl was a very thoughtful and insightful, intelligent young man. He reminds me in a way of Eugene Laverty.
Yes,
he's
I agree.
A real thing. He can, you know, worry away at a problem, but he will come up with some kind of solution with his team, which makes me think he's probably quite a good development rider. If there is going to be a new Honda next year, I mean, God, how many seasons have we been saying this for?
That's right.
We're talking superbikes.
And is it going to be a new Honda from the ground up, or is it going to be a revised version of the revised SP version with the Ohlins and the gold wheels? Yada, yada, yada.
If it was going to be a new one from the ground up, wouldn't we know by now?
Potentially. So you would think so.
Don't they have to homologate? I mean, wasn't that one of the problems with the Panigale? They had to sell so many before it could race. And I'm sure that the season it came out, Carlos Checa was worried that he might have to run as a guest rider. Your points don't count. What do they call it when they do that? They had it in British Superstock with Steve Scouselad riding
Brogan.
The BMW. Steve Brogan. When he's running BMW.
So it is a wild card, but they don't take the points. They just don't take the points.
No. They said basically you're riding as a guest rider. So,
but really, I don't think Honda are going to have too much of a problem homologating a new Fireblade more than Ducati with an uber expensive Panigale.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But also, you've got the chance. You've got the point of Mickey van der Mark. He could fall into the Johnny Ray scenario of being loyal to Honda for so long, which then costs him a potential seat in MotoGP. So if he does move to Ducati, there is a better door to open than the Honda one because there are more options.
There are eight seats which you can choose from,
indeed.
Or they can find a vacancy for you. Rather than, yeah, exactly.
Rather than the four.
Five,
sorry.
LCR,
right.
two Mark VDS, and the Repsol teams, yeah.
Two Mark VDS bikes, that's right. 5 points. Yeah. So yeah, you've got three more options.
That's exactly what I thought of when we were just mentioning about Stefan Bradl there. I mean, when I spoke to Johnny Ray at Qatar World Superbikes last year, you know, with his absolutely dominant season, and saying, you know, you'd stayed with one manufacturer so long, and he very carefully didn't mention Honda by name, but he said, you stay, then you think, he said, I had offers, but it was never for what I really wanted. And he and I got the distinct impression, I think he almost said it, I just thought, no, I'm happy here, it's a great paddock, I've got a lot of friends here, it's good racing, and I had this chance, and I thought, yeah. And I think that's why we've seen such a surge in his determination and commitment. Not that he wasn't determined and committed with the Honda, but he was having to override it.
Exactly. I mean, right. That's the difference, isn't it? He's a happy rider on a fast bike now, rather than a happy rider on not quite so fast.
I mean, we watched him the first year here, and the first friends who visited us here came over for that weekend on the spur of the moment. In fact, we're going to their wedding in Italy in August. They came over, and Pete, our friend, is a big Honda man. He's very brand loyal to Honda. And he was just absolutely weeping every time Johnny Ray, as we watched them go round turns 1, 2, 3, 4, going past everyone. And they got back round to that kilometre plus straight, and they all just went zoom, 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 zoom past. He had to do it all over again. You think, oh, it's got to be soul destroying event.
You're going to say, how demoralising is that when you have to work so hard on the other 7/8 of the track? Then just to get the piss taken out of you on the straight.
Now, we're very aware that last week, Harry announced that he had an announcement that he'd make this week. And, of course, Harry's not on. It's me and Dave.
Yeah.
However, by the magic that is the MotoPod time machine, a.k.a. Harry does the editing, we have actually got, coming in here, we've got Harry's announcement. So here we go.
Hello, hi, it's me, Harry, here currently in the Barcelona recording this little one. Apologies if the audio quality for this little section is a bit subpar, as I am just recording this straight on my laptop microphone. That is because of my usual MotoPod microphone. Hopefully that is better quality than this, because it was... Yeah, anyway, my usual microphone is in my bag, and that is because as of when many of you may be listening to this, I am no longer working for Dorna Sports. I have decided to go a different way. You know, no bad feelings between myself or them. You know, I chose to leave, didn't get fired or anything crazy like that. But yeah, I have chosen to leave, and I will be returning to the UK. I'm not 100% sure of exactly where yet, but the bet is so far on High Wycombe will be my new base of operations. And yeah, that was the announcement I had to make. As I said, it's not really groundbreaking. It's just, yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. And I'll have some more details about what I'm doing on the next show, probably. It does still involve MotoGP, so I will still be talking about motorbikes on this show and every other waking minute of my existence. So back to David and Martin. Ciao.
So there you go. News from Harry. Hopefully he did manage to find the 32-minute point in the recording and drop it in there.
We've just filled in for the last 6 seconds of the trumpet voluntary almost.
Exactly. That was Clark's trumpet voluntary. That is a very difficult piece of music to play on a trumpet, which I know because I'd played the trumpet when I was a kid. I wasn't very good. So I've just realized... Yeah, you know, I was saying earlier about when I did show notes and they didn't show up, so I repeated them at home.
Yeah.
They've all duplicated again. So we got everyone's qualifying is listed twice. I'm trying to delete them as we go. Anyway, Moto 3. We had a. It was a very interesting weekend. I'm kind of hoping that the Red Bull ring is dry. Unfortunately. Somebody who is an avid Formula One fan that I work with had said because of its the orographic nature of the surrounding terrain.
What's orographic?
Please? Hills.
Oh, okay.
Orographic uplift is one of the potential trigger actions that leads to thunderstorms. It's in a bowl.
I understand.
Wherever the wind is coming from, it's got hills to jump up, but it's in a very tight bowl. When you're in a when you're downwind from the prevailing wind of a large range of hills, you benefit from what's known as the phone effect. Not phone as in brr, brr, hello, but F-O-H-N, and the O should have an umlaut. So it's Fern effect. I think he was an Austrian meteorologist who worked out that when you're downwind of a large range of hills, you have warmer and drier weather than the people who are on the windward side. This is a very small bowl, and therefore they just get wet a lot.
Ah, okay.
If it rains there and we have our third wet race on the trot, there's a certain Mallorcan Spanish rider who is likely to take himself out the back with a revolver. You know, I mean, anyway.
Yes.
But this was an interesting weekend. It was cold and damp on Friday. It was dry and warm on Saturday, and it just pissed down on Sunday.
It really did, didn't it?
Yeah. And then started to dry.
I managed to catch the start of the race. Even though I was at work, I did manage to catch the start of the race quite sneakily and watch the whole of MotoGP race. But as none of my bosses listened to this, I don't care.
Good. Yeah. Qualifying was interesting in as much as we had Ennio Bastianini got pole position from Andrea Locatelli and Aaron Canet. Ben Schneider was doing really, really well. And again, this sort of comes back to the Renault Long Straights, because he is a big lad.
Yeah, he is.
I don't know how heavy he is, but he's a six-footer, isn't he?
He's a big lad for a Moto3 machine, certainly.
Jorge Navarro, injured, as we'd said, riding with carrying these injuries. He qualified fifth. Brad Binder was sixth. Then we had Danilo, John McPhee.
Excellent.
Now, they did say that the Peugeot/Mahindras had got an update, and certainly John McPhee seemed to be benefiting from it.
Was that the new gearbox? Did they run that this weekend?
It was gearbox, and there was some kind of engine upgrade.
Excellent.
Danilo, McPhee and Hiroki Ono were the third row. Jorge Martin, Francesco Bagnaia, both on Mahindras. And Fabio Quartararo, the underperforming French lad, the fourth row. I can't mention his name without mentioning how he's underperforming. Juan Fran Guevara, Gabriel Rodrigo and Jakob Kornfeil were the fifth row. Conspicuous in his absence from the first five rows was Romano Fenati, who had a pretty crappy weekend.
He did. But also, did, if I remember rightly, the guy who I really think for the future, my big tip for the future, ahead of Quartararo, Bulega, what happened to him? Can you remember? Did he crash?
Qualifying, the highest place Sky VR46 racing team. We only got down to the 15th place here. If I remember correctly, I think it was, is it Mignot?
Yes.
He's the third rider, seen as the junior rider. He was the quick, I think he was 18th.
Crikey. Bad weekend for qualifying for those guys.
Yeah, they were all out of the first five rows. We saw Fenati got the biggest coverage he got was when he crashed. The race was absolutely soaking. John McPhee, for one, had said, I really think we should delay because this is just so much standing water. And as Sam Lowe's tweeted, watching the Moto3 race, the waterfall is actually a waterfall.
It is. And it all runs across at the bottom, doesn't it? Because it is on a natural hillside. There is a little river running across the left-hander at the bottom of the hill.
They've got good drainage at the bottom, but of course, all that means is, as you come down, as Dave quite rightly says, as you're tipping in for turn 12, you're going through a lot of, it's not standing water.
No, it's running water, yeah.
Yeah, really, really nasty. It also meant that after the first three or four laps were over, it kind of settled down into something that could be described as not like a Moto3. We didn't have the big groups beating each other up. There were a couple of smaller ones. As we mentioned earlier, Jorge Navarro was in a group with Fabio Di Gianantonio and John McPhee.
He was fast as well, Di Gianantonio. He's a good rider. Yeah.
But for the second time on a wet race, Kyrie Lampawi, who knows that he can practice all the wet racing he wants growing up in Malaysia, he just goes to Sepang at 4 o'clock any afternoon. It's going to piss
guaranteed,
down.
Isn't it?
He's going to get really good. I tell you what, he had some moments, though. He had some proper moments.
He did, but didn't he qualify 20th?
Yeah. He was way
incredible, because it was, the qualifying was dry, and then race day was, it was soaking wet. His all bets are off kind of weather.
He's either mad or stupid, or I mean, I did love that thing that someone quoted, that Ant West manager. Someone said, "Why is he so good in the wet?" He said, "Because he's too stupid to realise that it's dangerous."
Doesn't this go back to what we've spoken about before about intelligent riders and not so intelligent riders?
Yeah, and Parry was he's incredibly talented.
Indeed,
he wasn't smooth and just perfect. He was sliding and slipping, and
he has a huge amount of feel, doesn't he, in the wet weather condition, and to enable him to ride at that pace. It really is streets ahead of the rest of the field, and that field towards the front, there are no mugs on Moto3. There's a huge amount of experience in there, and he's just making them all look amateur.
I was waiting for I was waiting to see Livio Loi come through, because he's been really good in the wet before, and he didn't. He did get a couple of points, but Parry basically he led from the end of lap four. He was seventh at the end of first lap, which was, that's making up about 14 places. He was then went fifth for a couple of laps, then took the lead, never gave it up. You know, we had Hiroki Ono.
Hiroki Ono, he went with him, didn't he, as a Team Asia 1-2, but unfortunately he crashed out.
I mean, we lost. The funny thing is, we lost quite a lot of riders. Belega crashed out, Noradin Ono, Jorge Martin, Andre Mignot, Darren Binder, Juan Fran Guevara, and Lorenzo Petrarca. But some of the people who finished had crashed. Fanati crashed, remounted, and finished 18th. Philip Ertl, I'm pretty sure, crashed, remounted, and finished 17th.
Howie almost crashed.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it really was so marginal. But he did finish. Andrea Locatelli finished second. Ennio Bastianini was third. Jakub Kornfeil was fourth. And then, as we mentioned, Fabio Di Gianantonio McPhee, Navarro, Brad Binder. Only one place behind Jorge Navarro. There's only a 1 point difference when you're back at seventh and eighth. So he's still got a very commanding lead. Jules Danilo was ninth. Francesco Bagnaia was 10th. Satsuki Suzuki, Bo Bensnyder, after great qualifying.
And leading the race early doors as well. He led a few yards, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he crashed, but I think he ran wide, or he ran off through the gravel and had to rejoin. Gabriel Rodrigo, Livio Loi, and Aaron Canet rounded out the points, which means that Binder still has a 47 point lead over Jorge Navarro. Very nearly two race leads. Navarro himself is 19 points ahead of Romano Fanati. 112 to 93 is their gap. Francesco Bagnaia is 8 points behind Fanati, Nicolò Belega 10 points further back, Ennio Bastianini 10 points behind that.
It couldn't have been a better weekend, really, for Brad Binder, could it? Despite not finishing on the podium. It's still, the cards have fallen his way with people.
He won't give a monkey's about Parry.
Well, no, not at all. No, because he's no threat in the championship.
No.
He's a very smart rider that way. He could quite happily finish seventh, knowing the rest of the guys, pretty much, apart from Jorge Navarro, were all behind him.
We've got a South African leading, a Spaniard second, then come six Italians, four of whom are products of the VR46 Racing Academy. I tell you what, there was someone put up this thing where, was it Assen, where they qualified second, third, fourth?
Yes.
You know, really, really impressive. You've got to take your hat off to what Rossi and Ucho and the team there at that academy are doing. You know,
well, that was similar to Assen. The top eight were all Italian, weren't they, at one point?
Yeah.
I think six of which were VR46 riders.
It's only Bastianini is not in that paddock or that group. And
I wonder if that grates on him a little bit.
The Gianantonio. No, I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, you know, the fact that he wasn't chosen.
He's not. He's not one of the crew. Or if he's nice to plough his own field, to plough his own furrow, which I think is a nice way to do it.
Do you think the others gather around and talk about him and snigger?
Yeah, exactly that. Pointing and laughing and things like that. And then he goes and stuffs it on pole anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, we've had this surge of the Spaniards over the last few years, and they I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, I think they overtook Britain, British riders for all-time wins in the top class. Still a long way back from the Italians. I can't see them overtaking him before this surge of Italians move up through the ranks.
So, oh, good grief. Now.
Anyway, we'll see. Right, Moto2, and you need to do this because your favourite name in motorcycle racing.
You know, my favourite name in motorcycle racing, and my actual favourite livery as well. I love that Idemitsu, the maroon and the white. I really do. There's just something about it.
Yeah.
Very simple. Taka Nakagami, pole position for Moto2 ahead of Johan Zarco and Alex Rins. Simone Corsi on the outside of row two with Morbidelli and Sandro Cortesi, a man who has been around Moto2 for a while now, the former Moto3 world champion. Lorenzo Baldassari was it? Go on, sorry, carry
sorry.
On. No, go ahead.
Sandro Cortesi, the man who, when he came up, I said, you watch him, because I think the higher up the series he goes, the better he'll get, which just goes to show how little I know about bike racing.
There will be more of that in the future as well, I'm sure, as people come through in the Quartararo stylee with all the pomp and circumstance and flatter to deceive for the time being. I know we cop a little bit of flack for that every now and again because there are mitigating circumstances sometimes. But yeah. Again, another one flattering slightly to deceive with an extension on his contract for next year, Alex Marquez. Go on.
I was amazed at that. I thought he's going to go the way of, and I hate to say it because we've recently lost him, but Louis Salom, who his first season, well, not very good. Second season, not much better. Right, we're going to drop in and moving down the teams. I'm surprised Alex Marquez has got another shout.
Well, I had heard a little rumour on the grapevine that he was going to be running in a private team, that he was out of the door at Australia Galicia. So something has changed there. So he has another year on his contract. So, you know, good luck to him. Fair play to the lad. Yeah. He's got it. Then crack on and seize it with both hands. Marcel Schotter in ninth. And Sam Lowe's fairly lowly for him. 10th place. He didn't have the best of weekends, did our Sam?
No, he didn't.
As we'll come to in the race. And, you know, he used to qualify and certainly on the front two rows, the higher end thereof. So a little bit disappointing as we go for Sam Lowe's. Hafiz Syrin, Thomas Luthi, Jonas Folger. Interesting to note where Jonas Folger is, 13th place, ahead of Axel Pons and Luca Marini in 15th place.
We got to the race and it was disgustingly wet again.
It was.
Now, I'm chuckling because I was watching this and having a conversation on Viber with Pete Jones, our crazy bike racing friend from Welsh Paramedic. He's been over here a couple of times now, and he was vibing me with comments like, wow, 73 Marquez is doing well. Crashed.
Bugger.
Wow, Morbidelli, what a pass. And then before I could reply, he did another pass. Morbidelli was really aggressive, like stupidly aggressive. But brilliantly aggressive. Then he crashed.
And then he crashed as well. It was almost, there's an air of inevitability of whoever led the race was going to crash out.
And this was the race of the double crashes.
Yes, it was.
We had Sam crashed, remounted, crashed again. Morbidelli crashed, remounted, crashed again. Marquez crashed, remounted, crashed again. It was just Tom Luthi crashed out. You don't see that very often.
No, that is an unusual one for him.
And Alex Rins was a weird one. It wasn't turn one. He hadn't got to turn one. He could have only just started on the brakes. And the back wheel just came around and the entire bike slowly pirouetted as it flopped over onto its side. It was
almost aquaplaning.
Really, yeah. But it wasn't violent. It wasn't a Tony Elias or Valentino Rossi, the Indianapolis in the rain.
One of the more graceful crashes you'll see.
Absolutely slam dunked. No, this was kind of, you almost expected to hear Swan Lake playing in the background.
You remember Pedroza crashing there? He's up and bang, then he's on his side before he could even blink.
Yeah, because I seem to remember that was a very wet year, and he was something like 7 seconds in the lead.
Yeah, he was.
Going, Danny, there's a reason that no one else is doing the pace you are, because it's bloody dangerous. And I think we were on the onboard, and then suddenly it all went horizontal.
One of the fastest from vertical to horizontal I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was horrible. I think he hurt himself.
He re-broke his collarbone, didn't he? Was that the same year he broke it at Le Mans, and then did he re-break it then? Was that the same year? Harry will know. This is when we talked to Harry, and Harry goes, Harry, it was lap six, and he was wearing Alpine Stars. And
right, 54 minutes and 52 seconds. Drop that one in there, Harry.
I have no fucking clue.
But we had 15 finishers and 12 crashers, many of whom crashed twice. Now, does that, in your crash stats for the year, does that count?
As it has double? To.
Does Sam go down as, he crashed twice at the Saxon Ring?
Yeah, absolutely has to. Because whichever way you look at it, a crash is a crash. You can't uncrash. So, yeah, I would say so. But
what we had at the front was, I tell you what, I am really, really sold on Johann Zarco. As a young man, I've really taken to him since that press conference in Catalonia.
Oh, no question.
That was fantastic. The backflip, you know, he's obviously enjoys what he does. He's not a Rossi character, you know. I mean, bless him, any character that ever comes through motorcycle racing is always going to be compared to Valentino and come up short.
Yeah, of course they are.
He's a different character, but he's obviously
very likable.
Yeah. And bloody hell, he's good. He took his time. He found his way. He was in the top five, top six in that group for a long time. Then he got on the back of Rins. Then they both, I think he tried to pass him, and they both dropped back, or he dropped back. And then he just made his way through, and he inherited the lead when we lost Morbidelli.
Yes. There were a few that fell off in front of him, but to finish first, you've got to finish. So, you know, he was taking his time, and he's a thinking man's racer. He didn't rush anything. He waited for others to make the mistake and capitalized on it.
But stonking up behind him, someone who'd done an equally careful but diligent job, was Jonas Folger.
Indeed.
And the two of them, it really was 0.059 of a second. So 59 thousandths. Separated them at the line. Folger had to do the pass, had to go for it to try and get past Zarco.
And he nearly made it.
Yeah,
you know, he gets an A for effort. There's no doubt about that.
But did you hear Zarco's comment afterwards? He said, I could hear him. I thought maybe he's not close enough. If he is, he must go for it. I saw him come past, so I just managed just to slow enough to turn inside. And I thought, he's a thinker. He's another
right.
one of
the... It's racecraft is huge, isn't it? Anybody can be fast and talented, but you also need racecraft. And that's another big feather in the cap for a champion racer, and which he is.
And the other thing worth mentioning, in a lonely third place, 20 seconds behind those, the two winners, but the third place on the podium went to Julian Simon. You know, very, very popular member of the paddock here. Was very, very good in the first year of Moto2 when Tony Elias won.
He was. No, he was a contender, wasn't he?
And you know, that's a blinking good result for QMMF. They got their first point with... I'm sorry, I'm talking bollocks. I'm thinking about Saeed Al Sulaiti, the Qatari riding World Superbikes. He got a point, but he doesn't actually ride for QMMF. But Julian Simon, you know, okay, they won a race with Amp West in the wet last year. But
and the lone speed up as well.
Yes, yeah. Well, yeah, the lone finishing one.
Lone finishing one, yeah.
Simeon, of course, is...
Yeah, I mean, the lone finishing speed up, my apologies.
What kind of team employs two riders, one called Simon and one called Simeon? Really confusing.
Really.
Matthew Pessini in fourth, Baldessari fifth, Marini, Siren, Raffin, Isaac Vinales, Dominic Agata, who really seems to have been struggling since he came back, and Takaki Nakagami came in 11th, having crashed and remounted.
Indeed.
Remy Gardner picks up 4 points.
Didn't crash.
Robin Mulhouse didn't crash. Edgar Pons and Sandro Cortese got the last point. Cortese, I think, did crash or ran off.
Yeah, he was two laps down, wasn't he, at the finish?
Yeah, so we lost Rins, Morbidelli, Lowe's, Marquez, Simeon, Luthi, Pons, Willerot, Corsi, Vierge, Schrotter, Oliveira. Consider that Johann Zarco went into this race just before the summer break. They call it summer break. It's only 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But he went in level on points with Alex Rins, although ahead on count back of race wins, 4 points clear of Sam Lowe's. He is now 25 points clear of Alex Rins and 29 points clear of Sam. Sorry, 30 points.
30 points, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for him, this worked out beautifully.
Didn't it, just?
Then, though, look at the group behind. You've got Tom Luthier on 93. Okay, he's not going to be a title contender, almost certainly, unless the three guys ahead all have...
Oh, no, there has to be a massive issue for the top three for Luthier to become a contender, who's, like you say, only 10 points ahead of Taka Nakagami.
Taka Nakagami, 83. 83 points, 10 points behind Luthier. But then 10 points behind him, only, sorry...
Equal
on points with Taka Nakagami is Jonas Folger. We've all been saying, oh my goodness, where's his season gone? He's having a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, he's still joint fifth. They put him down to sixth. He won a race in Qatar. So actually, I think he should be above Nakagami because he won the race.
Yeah, you would think so. On as you go back on race wins, don't you, in results. It's nice for Tech 3 to get a 1-2.
Yeah, very good. And then Franco Morbidelli, who's down in eighth. Everyone keeps saying what a great season he's having. It's like, yeah, he's 66, you know, he's 17 points behind. But, you know, that group behind, I think, for the season will actually be you know, quite interesting to watch.
Yes, sir.
And I don't mean to be morbid. I don't want to bring anyone down, but I just couldn't help noticing in 12th place in the title in the series is still Louis Salom on 37 points. He was actually having a blinking good season.
He was, yeah.
Up till that happened. So, yeah. Ugh. Just reminds us, what, as Harry and I were saying last week, what these guys and girls put on the line for what is our entertainment. I mean, it's as close to gladiators as you're going to get. I don't know, I suppose boxers are close to gladiators. And they risk a lot as well.
But, you know, motorized gladiators go. This is the pinnacle, isn't it?
It is. And what makes it so fascinating is that, you know, I always think of that Marco Simoncelli thing of, you know, death will come to all of us. All you can do is look him in the eyes and smile.
That's right.
And you think that's an incredibly unusual attitude to go through life for someone that young. You know, normally you're like, well, I'm young. I'm never going to die. Don't even have to think about it.
They are massively aware of their own mortality.
When you get to 50, you spend a lot of each day trying to think of a really funny thing to have people put on your gravestone.
Who's going to read my eulogy?
Yeah, I still think Spike Milligan's is my favourite one. I told you I was ill.
That's the one. But I tell you, the other thing that, before we move on to MotoGP, the thing that always astounds me, and which is why even the slower riders at BSB in Stock 600, you know, the guys that are running sort of towards the back of the field there, they're all massively quicker than me. But chances are, with the greatest respect, I earn more than they do. And I don't put my life on the line going to work every day. And from a financial perspective, for what they do, the difference is these guys, and that's why I get annoyed on social media where people are saying, yeah, he's this, he's that, he's the other. And you just think, well, hang on a minute. You know, these guys, some of the guys, even at Grand Prix level, aren't earning a huge amount of money. And they have a lot of them are having to pay their own way. I know they're all professional riders. They don't go to work during the week like some of the guys at BSB. But when you look at what they're putting on the line for the return that they're getting, you just think, wow, it's the love of the sport, isn't it?
Yeah. When I remember in 2008, when James Toseland went to Tech 12 MotoGP, and I was not co-hosting on the podcast at that stage, but I remember, I think it was Jules and Bob did a show, and someone had leaked. I think Roger Burnett had told somebody who then broadcast it. I think that was the rumor. James Toseland was earning £160,000 a year, so about, what, $250,000, a bit less probably.
Yeah, thereabouts.
That was his salary. And they said, of course, he'll get bonuses on top of that. Well, that week or whenever it was, Wayne Rooney's wages had gone to £160,000 a week. And, of course, he gets win bonuses as well.
Of course, yeah, there's all sorts of bonuses and image rights and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, so his earnings from football, his actual wages from football, are probably not the greater part of his earnings. And I just remember thinking, I understand how economics work. It's supply and demand.
Yeah, oh, no
more
question.
More people want to watch football than watch motorcycle racing. And I kind of like that in a way.
I'm fiercely protective of our sport, as are you.
Which, compared the absolute blithering idiots that you get surrounding football. And there's a lot of, you know, very, very good journalists and very good commentators and some great fans and some great people who play it. But it just seems ridiculous.
It really does.
Anyway, I know you've got stuff to do.
No, we're okay.
Move on.
Time's good.
Okey-doke.
If you could take qualifying, mate. So I apologise that I haven't had a chance to catch up with the qualifying side of things.
Well, we probably had the most high-powered Q1 that we've ever seen since they introduced the Q1, Q2 system. We had, the usual suspects were in there. Loris Baz, Tito Rabat, Alvaro Bautista, Eugene Laverty, Stefan Bradl, Jack Miller, Scott Redding, both of whom I thought might have gone through. But remember, Saturday it was warm.
Saturday was warm and dry, wasn't it?
Bradley Smith hasn't been having a great time this season, so it wasn't a huge surprise to see him there. Cal has been in Q1 a few times, always seems surprised. He was very vocally blaming Stefan Bradl for it.
But he usually gets out of Q1, doesn't he? He normally gets invariably.
But in there as well was Danilo Petrucci, who we know is quick, and Jorge Lorenzo, the first time he's ever had to go through Q1. Lorenzo would have been having a torrid weekend. He crashed at least once. Yeah, no, he did. He crashed once during one of the FPs and looked hurt. He went and had x-rays and they said, no, his wrist is fine. He's not broken.
Just fucking sore.
And a lot of people are making the point, it's not his wrist that's the problem, it's his head or his mental state. You know, he just has looked so out of sorts since. And at Catalunya, people say, yeah, blame Ian Oni. He T-boned him, or he rammed into him. He rammed into him because he was going slower and slower.
He was going backwards.
Between the tyres on the road. And David Emmett makes a very good point about this on his roundup of the weekend on motomatters.com, that the Bridgestones, Lorenzo needs a lot of feel out the front. And he said the Michelin's grip as well as the Bridgestones in a different way. But, you know, it's not that they don't grip, but I don't know what they're doing.
They don't have the feel. They don't have the feedback on that grip that the Bridgestones had.
He can't do that, those ridiculous high, holding the high corner speed. I remember Cal saying he breaks about 5 meters before most, 3 to 5 meters earlier than other people, but he releases the brakes 10 meters before them, before everyone else does. You know, he breaks early, but he breaks much less.
Yes.
And I remember sitting in on one of his post QP interview FP conferences in the team tent at Tech Trois when Cal was there at Silverstone, and someone said to him, do you get to see Jorge's data? And he went, yeah, sometimes I wish I didn't, because I don't know how he does it. You know, something's not clicking.
No, it really isn't. And whether it's to do with the tyres, it could be, as well as the electronics, at least his visor's not fogging up this year, so that's one less thing to worry about.
Yeah, although he did have a bit of a problem. He would, at one stage, he was seen taking the little, you know, the little black plastic sort of rim cover that goes round the bottom of the visor, and he was removing that. And someone said, that's there for a reason. That's a sharp edge.
Oh, really?
It was loose. I'm sure it would have got fixed anyway.
Oh, okay.
But
interesting that he was even anywhere near Q2. It was an awful weekend for him, as you say. Nothing was going right. And then with the weather as well.
Q1, he kind of started to get quick. And he set no one else, I don't think, had got even into the bottom half of the 122s. And he went out and did a 121.737. And it was like, wow. Went back into the pit and sat there. Then Petrucci beat it. Only just. But he beat it 25 thousandths of a second, and Cal was getting close, and you could just see that. You know, we've all seen it before. We've seen it happen to Maverick Vinales. You know, him and Espargaro. I think that was 2 thousandths of a second between them, and they both decided to sit out, and then someone just got in between them. Beat both of them.
Yeah.
Which obviously pushed Maverick out of the top two, and he was furious. And I could see, you could see Lorenzo didn't want to have that, so he went back out again. Was on an absolute flyer. I think it was about 0.4 of a second inside, and he got to the last turn, and he ran. Colin Edwards kept making the point. He ran a foot over the curb. you know, there it's obviously in German colours, yellow, red,
and
black.
The curbing,
And Colin was saying, that's not a curb you run over. I've never done that. I've got close to it. You want to get close to it, but it's a fast sweeping corner. Is this turn 12 or 13? No, sorry, 13 this is. And he said, I don't understand why he's gone so far over. And it was dry, so it wasn't that there was no traction. It's just the angle of it, because it's slightly raised, his wheels just washed out, and he crashed again.
It was a weird... I have seen that. And it's weird, the line looked completely wrong. I'm no racer, don't get me wrong. But as you look at it and you think, why... And as I didn't know that Colin Edwards had made that insight. But when you actually look at it, and I remember watching it happen and going like, why are you even on that curb? The radius of the corner doesn't lead you towards the curbing. It leads you to the line that follows round on the inside, but no, the curbing's not to be. So unusual that he was just completely offline.
However, by 46 thousandths of a second, what he'd done earlier in the session was enough.
Thankfully.
Cal just missed out, and he went through to Q2. And he went out in Q2, and he crashed again, this time at turn one. And
on his first flyer, was it not?
He set a time.
Of his second run.
Of his second run, yeah. Yes. He went out, did a 1:22, so he wasn't that close to the top anyway. And everyone was just getting geared up. Right, when they come out for the second run, this is where you're going to see these times tumble. This is where new lap records are set, blah, 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 blah. And he crashed. And it was like, oh my God.
The irony is, his time from Q1 would have put him fifth in Q2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would have put him in the middle of the second row.
Yeah. I mean, that unfortunately, because that's not how it works. Well, unfortunately.
Oh, no, it isn't. But the irony is, at the time that he'd set.
Yeah.
But the time that he was actually given was 1:22.088 after his first run. So he didn't even break into the 1:21s.
No. No, Jonny Hernandez also, did Jonny crash or was he just slow? Anyway, Jonny was behind him. So Jorge Lorenzo was going to start 11th, which was his worst start for a long time. I'm trying to remember when he's started. He has started 12th once. I think that was Assen.
Was that Assen when he came back from the broken collarbone?
Yeah, or tried to at least.
At least, yeah.
However, Marc Marquez... I think it was David Emmett again, praised MotoGP, or was it Guy Anderson? Somebody did anyway, said, wow, Dorn have really got their social media sorted. They managed to avoid the temptation to use Lord of the Ring. They called him King of the Ring instead. And I'm like, well, that's probably Harry, and stuff that we'll use it. So Lord of the Ring, Marc Marquez. 1:21.160. He was 0.4 quicker than second place. Hector Barbera.
Fantastic.
Rossi, third. Kind of putting the lie to the fact that the Yamaha can't cope with the Saxon ring on these tyres. Danilo Petrucci was fourth. Just love that kid. He's fantastic.
He really is.
Paul Espargaro was fifth. Maverick Viñales, sixth. Andrea Dovizioso, seventh. Alessio Espargaro, eighth. Andrea Iannone, ninth. Danny Pedrosa, who has been, before Marquez came along, he was the Saxon ring man.
He was indeed.
You know, he was the king of the...
He was the king. He was the Lord of the Ring then.
10. Yeah.
That's unusual. I just noticed Rossi and Petrucci had the same time.
Mm. It was identical, and I don't know how they split them. I don't know how they split it. I suppose they went to the second fastest lap.
I would suggest so, yes.
Identical times. Yeah.
Danny.
Don't know what's happened to Danny Pedrosa since I bought his T-shirt at Valencia last year, because he was the only one of the four aliens who came out of that whole debacle towards the end of last season with any credit.
Yes, he did.
In fact, he came out with an enormous amount of credit because he just refused to get involved. And I was sort of, do you know what? I think he could be a contender, and I don't know what's happened to him.
No, again, another one. I thought he would do all right this year with the return to Michelin. He has a huge amount of experience on.
Yeah.
And it's not working. But also, the Honda is struggling with the electronics package and different engine spec. I don't know what spec of bike he's running. Obviously, we know Marc Marquez, is he back to the 2014 chassis, the 2015 chassis that he's changed back to? And so many permutations and variations to get that Honda to work properly.
I do suspect that part of the deal with Danny has been you... you get another 2-year contract, but you are the test bed. So if we want you to try something, you will try it, whether you want to or not. You know, I don't know.
That's true. Yeah, you don't know also. Yeah, that's right. And that's what Cal alluded to in our interview at Barcelona, is that, you know, the factory team, the HRC team, they try all sorts of things, but it doesn't necessarily get used, and it doesn't necessarily get passed down the line either.
No.
There's all sorts, and they can't develop the engine, but they can develop all sorts of components through the season. And it is a constant state of evolution.
The race, it ended up being a wet to dry flag to flag, but it was, you know, again, I'd refer to David Emmett's article, a fascinating article on motormatters.com. Do read it. And he talks that there is an element of luck.
Yes.
But there's also, you know, taking your chances when they raise themselves. Now, one of the things that's come out of this is the inability of the teams to communicate with the riders other than by a pit board. And David makes the point, if you're Cal Crutchlow, and I can't remember who the other rider was you mentioned, their pits just happen to be really early. You know, you're coming up over a hill in amongst other riders with spray coming up, trying to stay upright on a 250 horsepower monster in the wet, and you're meant to read a small board mixed in amongst all the other boards that's trying to tell you something. Now, Cal said, I couldn't even see it. He said, I just followed the others. He said, Valet and Dovey went in to change tyres. We're jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
He said, I just followed them in. I thought, well, if they're going in, I'll go in.
He took that at the very last second as well. He almost missed that.
Yeah. I thought it was very honest of him, you know.
But also, when you're in a group, they don't tend to look at their pit boards anyway, because they know who's behind them. They know who's in front of them. They can hear them and see them. So they don't tend to look at the boards because they're in their own battles.
This had happened to James Tozen, didn't it? When he got black, he was told to drop one place, didn't realise because he wasn't looking at his pit board. He said, I don't bother with pit board for the first 8 races. He went around 3 times, they still didn't, so they black flagged him and disqualified him. And eventually he noticed, but he said, I was in a group. I was like, you know, this, I don't look.
You don't need, there's no gap to manage. So the only time really that they check their pit boards is when there's a gap to manage so they can respond to it. You got guys around you who need a pit board. You can see everybody.
So we set off very, very wet at first. Everyone's on full wet. Rossi led the first couple of laps. Dovi, and, you know, someone we know is very good in the wet, and Marquez. And Marquez started going backwards. Now, he'd put the super soft wet in.
He had.
They had said, if it starts to dry out, that will destroy it. So this apparently is a wet version of the old qualifying tyres that could do two, like, you know, do an out lap, a pass lap, and an in lap, and that's it.
That's your lot.
And he just was dropping backwards and backwards and backwards. He ended up down in ninth on laps 11, 12, and just said to himself, well, I've got nothing to lose. And he was the first one. No, he wasn't the first.
He ran wide early on as well, didn't he? Which cost him a few places.
Yeah, he ran wide. He went into the gravel. He came back out.
Motocross mode, go.
But this is where we have this thing. Now we have intermediates. Dorna had asked Michelin to provide intermediates. The main reason, apparently, is that on kind of half wet, half dry practice sessions, it will encourage people to go out and sponsors to get
it helps for TV coverage, doesn't it? Rather than pictures of people sat in a garage, thumbs up and drinking from sponsors' bottles.
On Friday, when it was damp and it was cold, you had Cal went out. Now that's Lucho. Someone said that's Lucho saying, go out there, do an out lap, a fast lap, and then come in at the end of the fast lap. And you're getting TV time for your sponsors because he's the only bike out there.
Yeah.
And then Stefan Bradl went out, you know, and then someone else because. And they're sort of taking it in turns. Yeah, we'll get a bit of TV time for our sponsors.
Which is part of the name of the game, isn't it?
Exactly. But in the race, I mean, you could just see Rossi was quickly overtaken. We had Dovi leading.
Dovi led for a while, didn't he?
Danilo Petrucci was just doing so well.
I was so happy for him to lead that race.
Up to the 10th lap. And again, I refer to our Viber conversation. Pete Jones sent to me. Have you just heard on the TV commentary, some guy had put money on Petrucci to win a race this season. He was stood to pick up £30,000.
Oh, man.
And I think the comment we made was, whoops, there goes 30 grand.
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah.
And then Marquez had a massive moment. another of those out the saddle, worthy of Randy Mamola, sort of, oh my goodness, how did he save that? And he went in. And he said about the intermediates, nah, it's not an option for us.
But they've never really used the intermediates, have they? Nobody has any real data or any feel or feedback.
Scott Bing had gone in really early. Scott had had a fairly bad qualifying, a really bad start. He'd worked his way up to, what was it, ninth?
Yeah.
He got up to seventh.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And he went in at the end of lap 19. Marquez, I think, had actually gone in by then. Somebody went really, really early and came out and almost immediately crashed. Paul Espargaro.
Yes.
Went in, put after 13 laps, put intermediates on, came out, crashed.
There's no data on them.
And this is another really good point that David Evans makes. The Honda is tall and high. It puts a lot of weight on the front.
Yes, it does. Brake.
Therefore, it puts heat into that tyre. And Marquez and Crutchlow are very good, apparently, getting those tyres hot. Now, when you're at a hot place and it's dry, that's not good because it degrades the tyre quicker than other people. So they have to go harder, which means they suffer in the early laps, yada, 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 etc. In this situation, it was really good for Marquez. And he did say for three laps he was on a knife edge.
But it wasn't a particularly wide, dry line, was it? Somebody of his style, who, you know, he's not an apex-to-apex man like Lorenzo, who'll, you know, hit that same 50 pence every lap. You know, he just grips it and rips. And those first few laps, watching Marc Marquez on that dry line, and then like,
He went a little bit quicker than everyone else. Then he was 4 seconds quicker. Then he was 7 seconds quicker. Then he was 7 seconds quicker again. And that's it. That's paid for the 24 seconds he was in the pits.
That's right. He clawed that back in four laps, hadn't he?
And I think also in his risk assessment, I mean, he was only behind Lorenzo, who is second place in the championship, still remember?
Yes, he is.
He was only behind him for the three laps immediately after having changed. Then he ripped past him and he very, very quickly got himself right up front. Jack Miller had led for a couple of laps.
He was still out on the wets, wasn't he? But the difference in speed, that was the beauty thing for me, was watching Marquez pass Jack Miller, and the pace that he did it was scintillating.
Oh, it was like he was going past the back marker who was getting out of his way.
It was incredible.
It really, really was.
It wasn't a difficult overtake, don't get me wrong, but it was the manner in which it happened and the difference in speed.
But we also had Scott Redding looking for his second consecutive podium and his first ever second place in MotoGP. And he was holding his own. That race needed to be 28 laps long. In fact, 29 laps long, and he'd have done it.
29, he'd done it.
Cal had come up, similar to Marquez. He'd gone on to slicks and then just left Rossi and Dovi behind. Well, sorry, he left Rossi behind. Dovi, Cal was clearly much quicker. He was catching him fast. He got past Dovi, and then Dovi was just on slicks as on a rapidly drying track. Scott Redding was on intermediates, and he said, there's nothing I could do. He was gutted. He came fourth. Cal was second. Immediately started saying, well, that'll show the people who misbelieved me. I sometimes think, in terms of PR, Cal doesn't do himself any favours.
No, he doesn't.
If things are going wrong, he's very quick to blame anyone other than himself. Then he'll throw in I've made mistakes myself sometimes. And you think, oh, that's big of you. We all know that. We watch, you know. But and then it just, I don't know.
You want to say something? Go ahead.
Well, the Pete, my mate, who I was vibing with, I just got one view again. Have you heard Crutchlow? What a knob! And it was his post, his Parc Fermé interview. And I always think you should cut them a bit of slack in that interview. They're pumped.
Absolutely. Adrenaline's flowing massively, isn't it? They've just got off the bike, congratulated by the team.
They've been on the edge of disaster for 30 laps.
Exactly.
I mean, Lucho is absolutely over the moon. The whole team was. They all congratulate him. He's ridden a brilliant race. He really had done well. It just seemed a bit... I just sometimes wish he had that presence of someone like a Rossi or Jack Miller. to just, I know Jack,
humility,
you know, see, I'm not an idiot, which was a little bit of a dig back, but Jack's been getting pelters for a couple of years from me as much as anyone else. Certainly last year, I just didn't think he looked like a MotoGP rider. You know, all the jokes about the only gym he's seen is the one that he goes down, the gym that he goes down the pub with. but, you know, I don't know, it just takes the edge off your feeling of joy for the guy when he's like, see all those people who misbelieved me. And I'm thinking, Cal, that's not even English. I know you're from Coventry, but...
No, his Spanglish was huge in the post-race interview.
Yeah.
And yeah, for me, it's like this and...
Yeah, it always reminds me of Steve McLaren, the former England manager, when he was interviewed by an English journalist in a Dutch football... when he was managing SA20. And if you haven't seen it, anybody, you might not like football, but just... look up Steve McLaren, Dutch press conference, and you hear a...
he's brilliant.
He's a northerner of some description, isn't he? Yorkshireman,
yes,
I think.
Yeah, he is. Somewhere up there.
It's like, why are you speaking with a Dutch accent? The guy who asked you the question speaks perfect English.
I was half expecting when I spoke to Cal at Barcelona that he would go into that Spanglish thing, but thankfully he didn't. He stayed away from it. There was little glimpses of it, but it was nowhere near what he... I mean, I watched something on the World Feed with Dylan Gray, and it was hugely Spanglish, which you think, well, okay, I understand how difficult that is from the amount of time he spends with Italians and Europeans. And but really, you just sometimes you got to breathe and have a listen. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from with Cal. He's a difficult customer in that, but he's always been that way. He's at least consistent on that front, and he is very Marmite in that respect.
Yeah, he is, and he's a great rider. And you know, I mean, I've long said I don't really do the flag waving thing. I won't shout for someone just because they're a Brit.
No.
So, but at the same time, it is nice to see. You see, Scott Redding, I just really, really like him. I've seen him go from, with my time in Motorpod, I've seen him from speaking to him as a gangly teenager who's like just a bit shy to a really thoughtful, deep, and quite nervous 2 years ago. To this year, he was so buzzing. It was such a joy to see him like that. And I think he's getting some of that back now. And I think, you know, of the current crop of riders, if we're going to have a British MotoGP winner, I would put money on it being Scott Redding before anyone else.
That's a fair shout. I wouldn't argue against that.
It might have to be in the wet. I don't care.
I wonder how many people were watching those last couple of laps with Cal Crutchlow thinking, any minute now he's going to tuck that front.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. So fair play. Second place behind Mark Marquez.
Yeah. Marquez, though, I mean, I think what's really scary is he came up and he was blisteringly quick. But then when he started hitting problems, he didn't seem to able to accept he was having problems. So he just started to remain blisteringly quick and he fell off a lot. And so we had, you know, Lorenzo wins last year. Now we've seen him ride really cannily. Like you said earlier, Dave, racecraft.
Yeah.
You know, behind Jack Miller, it doesn't matter. 20 points at Assen was, you know, what did Lorenzo get? 4 points. Rossi crashed. It didn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
You know, he's bigger so picture. Far ahead. It's much better to come second and let Jack have his moment. And I mean, Marquez has said since, to be honest, I don't think I could have caught him anyway. I wasn't willing to take the risk he was going to take.
Season before, he would have taken that win because winning was everything.
He would have gone for the win and, you know, and two times out of three, he'd have got it. But one time out of three, he'd have crashed out.
Absolutely right.
And you lose six races out of an 18-race season and you're struggling to, you know, be a title contender. So we have Marquez, Crutchlow, Dovi, who came into that last corner behind Scott Redding, and the drive he had out compared, it was like Scott had missed again. It wasn't. It was just slick tyres up to temperature against intermediates that just really...
It was. So it was just simple. It was a simple matter of tyre selection, nothing more.
And, you know, it was 0.3 of a second. And then Way behind, 11 seconds behind them was Andrea Iannone. 3 seconds behind him was Danny Pedrosa, sixth. You know, Jack Miller was seventh in the end. Rossi was eighth. Barbera was ninth. Bautista, Laverty, Vinales, 12th. Vinales does not like the wet, does he?
No, not in
not yet.
But the Suzuki's not very keen on it either.
Then we had Bradley Smith. Then we had Aleix Espargaró. Yeah, backing up what you just said about the Suzuki. And then Jorge Lorenzo got a single point. Tito Rabat was a lap down. Loris Baz was 2 laps down. Yoni Hernandez was 3 laps down. We lost Paul Espargaró and Danilo Petrucci. Amazing, actually. We only lost
the two riders. Yeah, looking at the rest of them. One thing I just want to just touch on, Jack Miller, Valentino Rossi and Hector Barbera all finished. They finished within 0.6 of each other. So that's a nice little nod to Jack Miller that he beat Valentino Rossi fair and square, and literally just by half a second. A great battle that those three had between them, and Jack Miller coming out on top of it.
Yeah, and we have
confidence. Confidence breeds confidence.
But now we've got Marquez is 48 points clear of Lorenzo, 170 points to 122. Another 11 points behind is Valentino Rossi, and it's starting to look unless
that's one hand on the trophy, isn't it?
I don't think Marquez is going to have a mind fart and start throwing it around. Now, people have said the second half of the season always favours Lorenzo because we've seen so many surges from him because he goes to tracks that he likes. Well, the next one, no one knows whether they like it or not because we haven't been there yet. No.
But he's also coming from a long way back in the mental stakes, isn't he? He's no confidence. He's not happy. Yeah. His equilibrium is off kilter, whatever you want to put it. His head's fallen off, whatever angle you want to put on it. He is not in a good place at this moment in time.
And going back to Cal, I think this is one of the things about the strength of being a character like Cal, who is abrasive, or I don't know how you're going to put it, combative.
He is, yeah.
You know, they're all competitive.
Of course.
Cal's combative. If Cal had found himself in the situation Jorge was in, I think he'd go away for 3 weeks, spend time with Lucy. They've got their first child is imminent.
It is.
I don't know exactly when it's due, but
3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Yeah, so he might be going to a Red Bull Ring, you know, as a new dad or about to become a new dad. But I think he'd go away, and all this would just he'd have to focus just to be able to go erase first half of season, blank sheet, and he'd come back, and it would be like it had never happened.
The old control alt and delete thing, isn't it? It's like fuck it, it's gone now, it's history, move on. But exactly. Jorge, you think is going to dwell on it?
Yeah,
it's going to hurt.
I don't know the kid. I've spoken to him for 45 seconds. You've interviewed him. But from what we know of him, I've read his autobiography. And
did you get to the end of it? Well done.
The first one. It's a bit of a car crash, but not in the sense it's badly written.
No, no.
It's painfully honest.
Oh, it is. But it is hard. It's the hardest work autobiography I've read after John Reynolds.
Right. Yeah. I've not read John Reynolds' autobiography. No, okay.
Movies.
It was, yeah, I think he will go away and he will torture himself.
No,
and
I think so. You can imagine self-flagellation in Lugano.
And he may absolutely prove us wrong, come back refreshed, renewed, and just...
But Martin, he has to.
Yeah.
Because... Everybody else, but, you know, Marquez has got his dander up, and there's nothing more dangerous than Marquez with his dander up, and you're trying to come back from where he is. I don't doubt that he will. You know, I'm not being disparaging in that respect. But the problems that he's had aren't going to go away quickly because they're caused by external factors. It's not just him being pissed off. It's potentially the bike, the tires, the weather. It's all things that he actually can't control. And that's what pisses him off the most.
But I also think from the little we know about his character, I also think he might mentally be writing this season off because he's going to the Gassi.
Do you think so? Might,
yeah. No.
Or is he thinking things? He's starting to think things that might not be happening as well, as in Valentino getting little upgrades.
He might, in his mind, be saying, okay, I'm the same person. You know, one of the hardest things about having a problem is to recognize that you've got the problem.
Oh, of course.
People say that about mental health. People say that about happiness. People say that about, you know, when people are niggling at a problem at work, and then someone else comes and goes, why didn't you try that? And the hardest thing in the world is to accept that someone else might have just gone in and gone bang.
Yeah.
But yet sometimes the greatest or it's so easy for them because they haven't arrived through the same route that you have to where that problem is. They come in from a completely different angle.
Yeah, different thought process.
You can't see the wood for the trees. I think he will be to himself blaming, I've signed for Ducati, so Yamaha aren't giving me the proper parts, or the tyres aren't good enough, or they're not listening to me. I think he will find a lot of ways of blaming external factors.
Of course. But he's a rider, and they are by nature self-centered.
Yeah.
And it is hard for them to admit that there is an issue.
In the going back quite a few years past, he has been very petulant. And
oh, indeed.
He might throw his toys at the pram and just go, well, I'm going to ride to survive. I am not riding. I'm not putting everything on the line if you're not going to make things right for me.
I don't know whether his character would let that happen. I don't know. But you could do. Saying... Oh, no. This is the open discussion. This is the beauty of Motopod, isn't it? There's no yes or no answer.
The flip side of that argument is, even if he doesn't think he catch Marquez, he will make damn sure he beats Rossi.
I think that's his goal for this season, I would suggest. And yeah. The title is going to be difficult. He knows that.
That's probably more likely.
He wants second place in the championship ahead of Valentino Rossi. Guys, listen, just for the guys listening, Motopod at motopodcast.com with your diagnosis of Jorge Lorenzo's problems at this point in time. Be interesting to hear what you guys think. Motopod at motopodcast.com.
I think the mindset of beating Rossi, it's more likely. But the tragedy is, I think, a hell of a lot of Lorenzo's remainder of season comes down to what the weather is like at the Red Bull Ring at Austria.
No, agreed. I think that's going to be an interesting indicator for the rest of the season we need another dry race to see his level again. Because obviously at Barcelona it was dry, it was hot, and he was going backwards. And obviously, yeah. Assen was wet, and Sachsenring's been wet since. So another dry race, and if he's not really worrying the podium, then there are serious concerns in that respect. But yeah, his focus now will be to finish as lead Yamaha before he departs to Ducati for 2017.
You see, I think this is where you see the difference between a Lorenzo and a Rossi or a Marquez, and I would stick my neck out and say, or a Vinales. If they were in this situation, they'd want another wet race. So that, right, I've got to get this sorted. So I need another wet race to prove to myself, as much as anyone else, that I can do it.
It's getting the monkey off the back, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what he needs to do. He needs to podium in a wet race and two fingers up to everybody else and to himself and go, there you go, knob shit, you can do it. And then and then build from there. But we'll see. And I'm not sure that's going to happen particularly anytime soon. But as you say, we're coming to some decent tracks for Jorge Lorenzo, ones that he's had a phenomenal amount of success on. And hopefully he can turn his season around. But I think the championship for anyone else other than Marc Marquez, even at the halfway stage now, barring injury and anyone unfortunate, which we don't want. We want a fair fight right to the end, not ifs, buts and maybes. As everybody stays healthy and everybody stays fast, I think Marc Marquez has got a one-handed firm grip on that trophy at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that, it's blatantly obvious, but I don't see anybody challenging him from here
on. Now, we didn't think we were going to be able to bring you the most important part of any Motopod broadcast, the MCN Fantasy League, but they've just updated.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, today, or this evening. Normally it's not till Tuesday morning, but they have updated. So I'm able to tell you that Craig Lowe has further extended his lead.
Git.
Craig is now on a very significant number of points, actually, because it's the year of my birth. No, he's not on 1848.
He's on 1894 on here.
1965.
It says 1894 here because our notes aren't updated. Yeah, I know. They've only just been updated.
As we've been talking,
you're older than you look.
So I've opened it up. Shothole Racing CLLFC. Craig Lowe is on 1965.
Craig's a good friend of mine. He's a git for that.
131 points behind him is Stuart Nibbs with Nibbs's knee sliders.
Oh, he's overtaken Ben.
Craig, yeah, he did last week.
No, but Stuart's overtaken Ben as well, because on the one I'm looking at, he's in third, so he's gone up a place.
Only 13 points behind Stewart is Ben Fetterplace on BFA. Oh, of course, that's Ben.
Indeed.
B. Fetterplace, who's just become a renewed subscriber. A new subscriber.
Thank you again. So he's a renewed subscriber, and he's in the top three for the Motopod League, as is Craig Lowe.
I've got to mention, shout out to Gregory M. Smith Esquire, who's in sixth place purely for his team name, Ferntree Gully Fornication.
Outstanding.
I have no idea what Ferntree Gully Fornication is. It sounds like a very posh name for a porn producing film.
Really?
Porn film producer, but very impressed with that. So scrolling down, I've moved up another two places. I'm on 1575 with Hugh
Jars.
Harry keeps saying Hugh Jars. It's Hugh Jars Racing. Now I'm going to have to go down. I'm kind of shooting in the dark here, looking for Scott, who I assume
he was 95th previously. If that gives you an idea.
Yeah, so looking in that area, in fact, yeah, if you can tell me those. Oh, Roger England, the former leader, down in 87th. Roger, what happened? Okay, Scott's dropped down to 98. He's on 1109.
He only got 2 points this weekend.
Harry's dropped to 112th. He's on 1041.
I was 140th previously. I haven't touched my team for weeks.
Yeah, you've dropped to 143rd, 839. Jules, who has been in the past, certainly when we used to do the tipping competition on Ride On 2, Jules was a frequent winner. Jules was really good. Oh, Moto Len. Len has moved up again. He's 178 now, 617.
Excellent.
What I am going to look at, considering, what was Craig's points last week?
Craig's points last week, 1894.
Okay, so he's gone up 71 points.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, he had Marquez as captain and Barbera. I had Marquez and Rossi, so we both prof from that.
I think I've still got Lorenzo in my team, so I'm getting fuck all.
yeah. So anyway, that is the MCN League. Races coming up, sadly, not a lot. We've got BSB
at Thruxton, yeah.
Now, tragically, when I was involved in the setup of the Hampshire Air Ambulance, which is based out of Thruxton, you'll quite often see a large yellow, well, I say large yellow, it's a small helicopter, but it was big to me. In the centre of the airfield is the Shots Look In. That's the Hampshire Air Ambulance. And the only racing that went on any weekend when I was working there was truck racing.
Ooh.
A la Barry Sheen and Steve Parrish. After finished bike racing, went and did truck racing. It's kind of entertaining for about 20 minutes, and then after that, it's just really noisy and annoying. So I've not been, but it is fantastic.
It's a spectacle for the first few laps. Like, I went many, many moons ago and I watched Barry Sheen and Steve Parrish at Donington. And once you got over the initial shock of these fucking great big things thundering past you, it's like, okay, I've got his number. Yeah, it's the chassis number because they're not going past particularly quickly.
Yeah.
No, it's all right, but no, it's not for me.
So the next racing we got is Thruxton next weekend, 22nd to 24th of July,
yep.
BSB. Shaky or Leon, who do you think's the favourite for that one?
I think I'm going to go Shaky, because I think that
the reason they're the two I've got in my BSB team, and I need to decide who I'm going to put as captain.
Potentially, I think Shaky, but I think we could see the Hondas threatening again. Jason O'Halloran loves that place.
Yeah, he's nuts.
But actual top speed and horsepower, because it's such a flowing, big, fast track. I can, and Shaky's got his dander up, so I can see it being a Shaky double.
Yeah. Yeah. Austin Grand Prix on August the 14th. So, God, another. It's 4 weeks between. Yeah, it is. It's 4 weeks between.
Three. Okay. That's a track.
No. Everyone kept saying 3 weeks. Obviously, 3 weeks next weekend, maybe they meant. I don't know.
Maybe so, but yeah.
14th is Austin Grand Prix. The next thing after that is the final round of AMA. Sorry, Moto America.
Indeed.
The New Jersey Motorsports Park in Millville.
Is it World Superbike somewhere around Christmas?
And then World Superbikes are September next year. No, they're at the Lausitzring in Germany on the 17th to 18th of September. That's ridiculous. Now, okay, a bunch of them are going to go and do the Suzuki 8-hour in the next couple of weeks. Next week? No, it's not next weekend. 2 weeks' time. So we have got that. which we will probably do a show to wrap up.
Yeah, a week on Saturday, yeah.
I think that is it.
It is, yeah, because we're going to the summer recess, aren't we, for most.
Yeah, I think we'll probably do a show. Certainly, if we're not going to do a show next week, we will tell you how are we going to do that. We'll do a show to tell you we're not doing a show.
Yeah, the no-show show.
Just say hello, welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle and road racing. This is episode number 503 for Wednesday, 27th July, 2016. My name is Martin Darlington. Good night and thank you.
It's good night from me and good night from
that will be it. But that, in fact, we could do one of those every day and we get to our 1,000th episode much quicker.
Potentially, it's unlikely there would be a show next week, I think. It depends on Harry's movements, yours. I'm on night shift, so unfortunately, I'm precluded from that.
Yeah, it's really gutting, actually. I've got a month where I'm now back at work, but the girls are at home. Sharon and me have gone home. So I'm totally free to watch as much bike racing as I want, to do as many podcast calls as I want, and there isn't any bloody racing.
If you want to do a solo show on any particular topic...
Well, Monica, are you going to Thruxton?
No.
You can't go to Thruxton,
no,
right?
My next one for me is Cadwell.
Of course, next weekend we have got Thruxton. So next week we will do a show because we'll do the Thruxton one and we may have another announcement. I don't know.
Ah, okay.
I'll have to get the soundbite thing sorted out, the little fanfare.
Yes.
Do you know, I actually paid 79 pence to download.
Did you really? I'm sure the MotoPod, we can reimburse you for that one from the MotoPod subscriptions.
No. It's my gift to Harry. I'm so gutted that how can a 22-year-old, I'm not going to call him a kid because he's not.
Oh, he's not.
How can a 22-year-old lad know so much about racing that happened before he was born?
It's incredible.
I know of, Stirling Moss. I know of, Giacomo.
Jim Redmond, Bill Ivey, people like that. Yeah,
that's... Describe his bloody races. I mean, Mike Hailwood, we all know the stories of how little he knew about his bikes. He didn't care, just jumped on them and rode really fast. And Phil Reed. But
yeah.
I don't know about them in the detail that Harry will talk about Freddie Spencer's underseat fuel tank. Or, do you remember when Ron Haslam rode the Alf? Bloody,
on the L4.
The L4.
Hub center steering.
But you weren't born.
He's watched the 1987 season review for Wayne Gardner too many times.
Either that or he's actually reincarnated.
There's a potential.
Yeah. Trying to think. Which super, super knowledgeable bike journalist died just before Harry was born? It's like the Dalai Lama. Julian Ryder, Matt Oxley and David Emmett went out looking for... There's the sign. Oh my God, he's been born an Australian.
I don't know, mate. I just sit back and in some kind of bewildered awe to the fact of what he does and what he knows.
Yeah, it's kind of slightly scary. Thank goodness Harry is into bike racing and not like criminal activity.
Yeah, that's true. He'd make a great criminal mastermind.
What he'd need is a fluffy white cat to sit in his lap. And he would take over the world.
But the thing is, I witness him actually doing a show firsthand. He's not actually thumbing through books and things as we speak. He's just total recall.
He knows it. When we have the monster MotoPod, let's all gather somewhere, and we'll hire a marquee and we'll have a big bash. We're going to have to do a quiz and I'm on Harry's team. I don't care.
Quiz with no motorcycle racing and no aviation.
In fact, what we could have is 150 listeners, you, me, Jules, Jim, Bob, against Harry, and I still think Harry would be...
Oh, hands down. Hands down. No question at all.
Anyway, that's quite enough sunshine blown up the young Aussies out.
Yeah, it really is.
Right.
God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and your attention. Hopefully we've mildly entertained you. We probably haven't informed you. I'm always aware of that. We go through these race things and everyone's seen it. They all know.
Yeah, everybody knows what everyone... That's the thing about the informing thing. We go over it. We did have that conversation some time ago about not going through race results because everybody's seen it. But because we do what we do, we still do. And it's fine. It's just part and parcel of what we do.
Yeah. Anyway. that's a reasonably decent show. So we will do a show next week,
yep.
But we will take a week off the week after.
I think that can be our summer break.
Yeah, exactly. Unlike World Superbikes, we're only going to take a week.
we're not going to kick the ass out of it like they are. Speaking of the World Superbike break, Luke Stapleford will return in British Supersport this weekend at Thruxton, keeping the mileage up.
Oh, jolly good. Jolly good. Good for him. Why? Particular reason or?
Yep, because he's got fuck all to do till the middle of September.
Oh, I know. seriously, for these guys, it's the best weather for the most of the Northern Hemisphere you get in the year. And they're not bothering to ride bikes in very, very fast round and round in circles.
No, they're going to wait for the slightly chillier, slightly damp and less clement weather. Brilliant. Well done.
Easy. All right.
In Germany in September. Great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll do.
Cheers, everyone. Cheers and good night.
All the best. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.